League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Travis Johnson joining us now on the HRNP guest line, former Houston Texan teammate, former teammate with D'Amico Ryans. Travis, Brandon Cooks was an issue this past season. How would you handle the Brandon Cooks situation? Do you trade him? What's the line of demarcation of any sort of trade you would have for Brandon Cooks?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you're trying to do. If you think you need receivers, you think you won't get any in free agency, you think you won't get any draft, you got to keep them. But I probably, with all the draft capital we got, why not try to go get more?
And what's the least you would take for him, Trap?
Somebody like Brandon Cooks, I'll take at least a fourth round pick for him.
Okay.
Would you do it for a sixth?
No.
What do you think Texans are getting in D'Amico Ryans, Trap?
I mean, they're getting great leadership. They're getting a guy who, was almost a genius-like level of IQ when it comes to knowing the game of football. They're getting a guy who's passionate. They're getting a homegrown kid who, was second-round draft pick here, was our team captain, was just a leader amongst a heavy group of leaders. When you talk about when he was here, there was Arian Foster, there was Matt Schaub, there was Andre Johnson, there was, J.J. Watt, and everybody knew that he was our leader. You know what I mean? And it was never questioned. I mean, this is a guy who, when he came in, the second-round pick, we signed Sam Cowher, gave him $1 million, and they cut Sam at the end of training camp because of how good D'Amico was. You're going to get the greatest version of him. The things you saw in San Fran, you're going to get, times 10, in my opinion. If he hires his staff and wants the guys that he wants and the guys that he trusts, I really believe that this team can go places.
Trap, when you heard we knew he was a captain. We heard that, he was a coach on the field. He had the leadership characteristics and capabilities. As that translates to being a head coach, do you think that we saw things go wrong in Denver this year with Nathaniel Hackett because he tried to call plays and do too much? Do you anticipate that D'Amico will still call plays on the defensive side of the football? And how do you think to best handle the balance between his specialty being defense and then being the CEO of this entire thing?
Well, I mean, Nathaniel Hackett was a Hackett. So, and I always used to say, just like his daddy, he couldn't hack it. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, he's one of them guys that I've never trusted to be a head coach anyway. I didn't like his daddy. I don't like him. But when you talk about Miko calling plays, I think he'll have a great influence on, if you bring in a guy that knows your defense and knows what you want to coach up. I think, of course, you allow that guy to coach the defense. But he has to know what you like to call, why you like to call things. And of course, he'll have his input in on it, and I think that'd be a great asset. We want him here to make our defense better. We want to build our defensive staff the best it can be, and I think you allow him to kind of find the happy medium in between. Why is it that Andy Reid can call plays or whatever or whoever's calling plays and nobody says anything? I think being a first time head coach, I think you surround him with the right people. You surround him with a game manager on the side that gives you the ins and outs and the percentages of when to kick, when not to kick, when to go for two, when not to go two, when to call a timeout, when to burn them, when not to burn them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think you have that type of guy, especially because he's a first time head coach. You surround him with all the right people to help him be successful.
Travis Johnson, our guest on the HRNP guest line, former Houston Texan, former teammate with new Texans head coach D'Amico Ryans. I think the one thing that everybody's waiting for now, Trap, is what's D'Amico going to do on the offensive side of the ball? The three names that have been rumored to be interview candidates for the Houston Texans for offensive coordinator positions. You have the passing game coordinator from San Francisco, the receivers coach from Cincinnati, and then yesterday we found out the Kaylee dude from New England, the tight ends coach, are the only three names we've seen that have been requested interviews for the job. What direction do you think DeMeco goes with the offensive side of the ball, which is a concern for a lot of people that think that, you know, offense wins games these days?
Well, I mean, I think offense sells tickets. You know, offense puts butts in the seats. Offense gives people hope, but it doesn't win championships. It does win games, but it doesn't win championships. When you talk about the guy from San Fran, I would love to see him probably get an opportunity at that gig. Why? Because if you look at everybody who's running that Bill Walsh / Gary Kubiak, Coach Shanahan type of offense, it's doing well. And if a guy knows that offense, it's a guy that I would lean on, because if you look what Mike McDaniels is doing in
Miami,
you look what, you know, what LaFleur is doing in Green Bay, you look at what Kyle's doing in San Fran, I think it's a big deal. And I think you try to get that offense, because that offense right now, that offense in Minnesota got Kirk Cousins looking like a world beater. You know, so I think you gotta be able to lean on that offense. You gotta be able to find somebody who can implement that same offense, you know, back into this building, and so we can get some of the results we got in the heyday.
Trap, when you look at that, with that being said, and you look at the draft and you know the draft capital this team has, everybody is convinced you have to take quarterback at two. Do you believe that, and or do you believe that DeMeco might have a say, and they might say if he wants defense with one or both of those first two picks that they could go that direction?
I think with the quarterbacks, who are the top quarterback guys right now between C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, I think you got to take one of those guys. We need a quarterback. You know, we need a guy. I mean, of course, but we also need a lot around him. So, is it a situation of can you bank on maybe not doing well enough to get Caleb Williams next year? No. You know, you're in a position to make some things happen. I think in a position with the draft capital you have to make a lot of great things happen. So I think but it starts with a QB. There's nobody winning games in this league without a QB. You know, you can say you have a decent offense, you can say you have a decent defense, but without a QB you can't do anything in this league.
Trap, you just said offense doesn't win championships.
They don't. Defense wins championship, but offense gets you to the championship game.
All right. You mentioned you like the San Francisco passing game coordinator. Bobby Slowick. The name escaped me for a moment. I am too intrigued by Bobby Slowick. One of the things, and I know you're going to crush me for this, Trap. I know that you are. But Bobby Slowick's a West Coast offense type of guy, right? He's going to run the Shanahan stuff, a lot of the West Coast stuff that we saw a lot back in the days with Gary Kubiak, when, you know, DeMeco was captain for those teams. You look at a Bryce Young, college ball, played a lot out of the shotgun. C.J. Stroud played a lot out of the shotgun. The quarterback name you did not mention, Will Levis, played in a West Coast offense. You know, was hurt this past season, not very good, was really good in 2021 when he had Cohen, who was a Rams OC last year and now is back at Kentucky. How much do you think it comes into play from a college quarterback having to learn a new offense in the NFL, having to transition to the professional game, having that comfort level with a specific offense?
I mean, I think it's big because, you know, right now from high school on up, they've been destroying the pro game, you know, because they're not teaching kids how to take the snap from under center. They're not teaching them a lot. So I think that's why you'll see a lot of teams probably reach for Will Levis, even though he's probably not that guy. You know what I mean? You saw it years ago with other quarterbacks. You've seen it a lot, you know what I mean, with guys reaching because this guy plays in a pro-style offense, you know. So I think it'd have a big deal, but I think if you're going to be a pro and you think this guy, I mean, if you think he is who he is, then you can figure out quickly if he can take a snap from under center. You can see, figure out quickly can he read defenses from dropping in from a traditional back, drop step or back, whatever they call it, back cover.
Yeah.
Trap, I'm curious. You and I have had these conversations over and over the years, but it just was really intriguing to me when you brought it up. When we talk about the quarterbacks, but now let's talk about what you know best and the defensive side of the football and system. Like, how important is it that you be comfortable in the system that you have played? We know, and you and I have talked about how if you were taking one pick either way and played the system that you were playing your whole life, things could have been a whole lot different for you than being forced to play in the system that you played here in Houston. You look at Stingley a year ago, and he played a bunch of cover two, and he really didn't play man, which is where he could excel. Do you believe, and can you explain to the people just how important it is to play the kind of system you're comfortable with so you can get your best attributes out there?
Well, I mean, you should be able to see it every weekend. You watch a guy like Jalen Hurts. You watch a guy like the kid in Baltimore. You
Lamar
know what
Jackson.
Saying? Yep. Yeah, Lamar Jackson. You see those guys have been putting systems, you know, that suit what they do well, and they've excelled at it. And you notice the difference in quarterbacks, you know, years ago. You'd think if some of these coaches would have had that same mentality with Vince Young, we might still see Vince Young playing right now. You know, it's a lot that goes into it. You can't put square pegs in round holes. You know, and I think that's the lazy part of a lot of these coaches right now, is they're just coaching what they know, but then they don't adjust to their personnel. They don't adjust to who they have and what can make them better. You know, so I think when you're drafting the way you're supposed to draft, saying I'm gonna take the best player available, you got to make sure you surround him and put them in a situation to be successful. Because if they're successful, you're successful. You know, I think you look at what Brandon Hunt has done in Philly with Philly's done. You look at what Pittsburgh's done over the years. You look at those outliers of those teams, and you say, well, how can we do that? Well, these guys are drafting guys that fit their system. These guys are drafting guys that either that or they're changing their system to fit the guys that they already have. You know, and I think that's an asset that you can't change. You got to make sure you be a coach and coach up what you have and coach up to the best of your ability and coach them and to do the things that they know how to do.
Travis Johnson joining us on the HRNP guest line, former Houston Texan, former teammate with D'Amico Ryans. A lot of the conversation in the offseason, Trap, is going to be, okay, what do the Texans need to do to build this roster? What they do at two, you know, you're an advocate for quarterback. I'm cool with quarterback. I'm also cool with Will Anderson, Jalen Carter. You won't really know what you're doing at 12 until you're sitting on the clock at number 12, because what is the draft board going to be? It's impossible to predict. But also nearly $40 million in cap space. When you look at the build of this organization and trying to give D'Amico Ryan year one, what's that balance between win now and then the long-term vantage point of what the Houston Texans are trying to accomplish?
I mean, everybody wants to win now, you know, but I think you just draft the best players possible to fit that scheme. You build up, you know, we all know games are won and lost in the trenches. You build up your offensive line, build up your defensive line. You got great guys in the secondary. You know, you then get, if you get a quarterback, you get him some toys to play with. You know, you look at, I'm a big believer in tight ends. Right now, tight ends have been changing the game for years. And, you know, when we were in our success days, we had a great tight end. You know, and I think if you can find you a great tight end to be that valve, you know, I think that'd work wonders.
Trap, I'm curious. We know that you are a big Seminole from Florida State. The bench had a discussion this morning, and I just know your passion for Florida State. It's what would it take to tattoo your biggest rival, at least the size of a coaster, somewhere on your body? And obviously money's not an issue with you like it is where some people were saying, oh, $50,000 to $150,000. Would you ever put a hurricane you?
No.
That's what I thought.
No. There's nothing can make me do it. I got sweat equity in Tallahassee, man. There's nowhere else that I'd ever tattoo on my body.
So yeah, to be fair, Trap, you're a little bit of a different tax bracket than we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if I was, I mean, I just, that's just not me, you know.
$10 million, Trap.
No, I'm not doing it.
$100 million.
I'm not doing it.
Billion.
All right. Fair. $1 billion.
Yeah, you give me $1 billion, of course. Yeah, that'd be a fool not to do it.
Well, Trap, you could put the U, like, on your butt, and then, like, they said you can alter it, and then a week later you could put, like, a lipstick to kiss your rear end or something with it where you can make it funny, no?
Yeah, you could. Put it right in between the cracks.
All right.
The green side on the other.
That's a great way to end
Thank
the conversation.
You,
Travis, thanks so much for taking a few minutes, hanging out with the Killer Bees. Look to catch up again very soon.
Take care.
You got it. Travis and Johnson. Fill a little old Smitty and Trap show there a little bit. 713-780-ESPN. Do offenses win championships? Do defense win championships? Also, how about this Bears saying that they're already going to stick with Fields? Should we be looking into that from a Houston Texans point of view? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Where do you stand with what Trap had to say, Blankers, that defenses win championships?
I mean, it's interesting coming from a defensive guy. I obviously, he said he gave offense a lot of love, but obviously he stuck to his guns as a defensive player. I was shocked how quickly he was focused on two quarterbacks and going offense that quickly. I thought that he might show some love to your point of view about the prospects of possibly going defense at two, or you know, if one of those guys doesn't float your boat, doing it for D'Amico and bolstering your entire unit on the defensive side of the football. So I was a little surprised with some of the things he said.
I thought he talked out of both sides of his mouth a little bit, to be honest with you. The defense wins championships, but then you have to have a quarterback. I thought it was a little bit of a contradicting statement. And I think, too, that if you look at let's just look at who's playing in the Super Bowl now. The Chiefs, that's an offensive-oriented team. The Eagles, they have a really good defense, but it's an offensive-oriented team. Look at the championship game participants. 49ers had a really good defense, but an offensive-minded head coach. Cincinnati, offensive-minded head coach. Last few Super Bowl winners. You had McVay in L.A. You had Arians in Tampa. You had Reed in Kansas City. I think the defense wins championships mantra in the NFL, quite honestly, I think it's antiquated.
I don't agree. I think that it's not the way of like that Ravens team that won a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer. Like I think that era of defense wins championships is gone. But every Super Bowl, you have to have a player or a couple players that make that real impact play.
Joey,
like isn't there a good chance that this Super Bowl comes down to who has the bigger game, Chris Jones or
Kansas City won the first Super Bowl with Hassan Reddick? I would say a borderline horrendous defense.
You're right.
They just outscored everyone and out-weaponed everybody out there that year. And then after they gave up
20 points.
I think that a lot of it, too, is at a certain point when you build up a lead and guys are slinging it all over the yard trying to catch up, that it's a lot easier to defend, too. Because everybody knew that first Super Bowl championship for the Chiefs, they didn't have much on defense.
Yeah, but like look at Tampa or 2 years ago. The Kansas City scored 9 points in the
Super
Bowl.
Tampa had a great defense.
Because they had a great defense. Like, I'm not saying like it's not what it used to be, but a player like Will Anderson and Jalen Carter, like they can be a Aaron Donald-level impact player potentially in a Super Bowl moment. And like that's what you need now. Like you need those elite impact players that, you know, Malcolm Butler's interception in the Super Bowl. Like those
guys.
You're
talking about singular moments though. Like Malcolm Butler and Aaron Donald and JJ Watt. Like whenever you have one of those players, are you an automatic contender? Because whenever you have Pat Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Tom Brady forever, Aaron Rodgers forever, maybe Josh Allen, like you're instant contender every single year.
You are, but you still have to, like, in the biggest games, like, you need your defense to step up in a big way. It's one of the things that helped Cincinnati so much the last 2 years. Like, they
played
great
defense. They're not built on defense, though. Like, they had big defensive moments, but they're not a defensive team. Like, yeah, you need big defensive moments, just like the Baltimore Ravens needed to score a touchdown whenever they had Ray Lewis and, you know, that incredible defense that they had. I think nowadays, I think it's more of an offensive league than it is a defensive league. Is it good to have balance? Absolutely. Do you need some key plays and big moments, a big sack in a big moment? Absolutely. But I think the offense outranks the defense when you're building NFL teams these days.
I think when you look at it, it first became a pass-happy offense, and then it became just an overly dominant offensive-dominated league. And I think that you look at the Bills-Chiefs game a year ago, it was who's going to punt first, because neither defense could stop anybody. It was who had a better offense, and how many points were they going to score. And then they changed the overtime rule because they wanted to see it keep going on and didn't want a rule to get in the way, because it's all about offense. And I think that you can win with a subpar defense, but I don't think you can win with a subpar offense.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I feel like it's more of an offensive league these days. That's not to say that you can't have a good offense with a defensive-minded head coach. Now, it's a little bit more difficult. It's a little bit more rare, right, with the Texans announcing DeMeco Ryans at 359. He's a defensive-minded coach, not an offensive-minded coach. But if we think that offense outranks defense a little bit now in the NFL, I think that the biggest thing DeMeco is going to have to do in order to be a successful head coach for a decade, for 15 years, whatever, however long, he's going to have to be really good at hiring offensive coordinators.
He's going to have to hire a lot of them, too, I'm afraid.
Yep. If they're good.
Because we've seen coaching trees develop, and then the branches get snatched real quickly. And so that's what I'm afraid of, and that's what I was afraid of all along, is basically the only drawback I had with DeMeco Ryans is that if he succeeds, in part it's going to be because the offense succeeds, which means your offensive coordinator is going to be hired. And if you're trying to nurture a quarterback, the last thing you want to do is have a lot of change, because change creates a lot of potential for things to go wrong, and we've seen that. So I would like to hope that the Shanahan tree that he comes from and all the relationships he's built throughout his career in coaching will allow him to keep developing and plucking guys that are going to help him. But that's why you and I talked about this yesterday, Jeremy. I thought it was so important that not only you get the right offensive coordinator, but you also get the right quarterbacks coach, because in a lot of ways, that quarterback coach is the offensive coordinator in waiting that could still run the same system and do the same things for your quarterback's sake, if nothing else.
Yeah. What if it's Pep?
We'll see what happens. I don't think so. But look, I said during the season, if Pep's your quarterback's coach, you could do a lot worse. I mean, I don't think he's willing to accept a demotion, but if he wants to be the quarterback's coach and groom a young quarterback known as a guy that has been a quarterback whisperer in his past, I don't mind him trying to help the development, and maybe he learns some things from a true play-calling West Coast offense type guy. I don't know.
I don't. Actually, I kind of like it. Like, if Pep Hamilton, I tend to agree that it doesn't make sense for him to accept a demotion. But if he was willing to do that, I like the idea a lot of him being a quarterback's coach for the Texans, because I think he is really good in that role. I don't think his role of calling plays is very good. I think we see that a lot of days, though, or like a lot of times in the NFL. I think you have coaches who are really good position coaches that can really develop certain positions, but then you have them calling a play, and it's a totally different job. It's just like being an offensive coordinator to a head coach. It's a totally different job, probably even more so. From a position coach to a coordinator role. So I think Pep Hamilton's a quality football coach. I don't think he's a very good play caller in game planning for, opposing defenses.
That's why I said it's unusual if he would do it. But we've seen guys go back to school again. We saw Jameis Winston, who admitted that he had a problem that he needed to fix because he threw as many picks as he did touchdowns, and he decided to take less money and learn under Peyton and Breeze to try and get better. So he could do it, and I think that a lot of people may even respect it, going, hey, if he truly wants to be a play caller, maybe he takes a step back, but he learns something in the process and he gets another opportunity. Yep.
The last time we talked about this, we thought, no way that that Pep Hamilton would accept a demotion and be a quarterback's coach. But this was before he turned down the interview for the Tampa Bay offensive coordinator position, which I thought was very weird. And then I started thinking about it a little bit. He's got a really good he's got a son who's a really good quarterback at Pearland, Jackson Hamilton, who's like a legit dude. I'm wondering if he just doesn't want to screw up, moving his son out of Pearland. Now, I mean, coaches all the time, they go live for a few months away from their family, so maybe he just didn't like the situation. But it kind of, keeps that window slightly open. Pep just doesn't want to leave Houston because he's got a son who's really good at football at Pearland.
I hear that. I think the other thing coming off the disaster that was this last season for the Houston Texans is you always worry about if you're going to get another chance. But if you're going to get another chance in a Tom Brady-less Tampa Bay situation, and you don't know who's going to still be around by the time you start training camp, because that might be a huge fire sale. They might just decide, been there, done that, Florida Marlins, look out, here we come. We won a championship, and now we're pulling the plug, and everyone on our roster is available. And they didn't have all that many guys that you can choose from where you could say, I'd like, now the defense does, but Mike Evans could be gone. Fournette's obviously way past his prime. Julio Jones past his prime. So if he's going to go take another job, I don't think he wants to take it with not only uncertainty at the quarterback, but like a line that lost three-fifths of the line and wasn't very good, and a lot of aging players along with Mike Evans and Godwin.
Yeah, I could see that being the case too, where you know he just doesn't want to align himself with a sinking ship. And you know, Tampa Bay went the wrong way this year. Like they made the playoffs, but they went the wrong way. They went eight, they were 8-9, 8-10 if you count the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's a team that already went backwards, and they lose a quarterback, and you have. Who knows? You have Kyle Trask, who, ironically enough, is from Anvil, who could potentially be their starting quarterback. Bears apparently are sticking with Fields as their quarterback. Albert Breer reported this, which makes Joe George very happy because he overrates Fields. He thinks Fields is really good at football for some reason when he can't complete a pass. Do you think it's weird that they've already kind of tipped their hands that they're going to stick with Fields and look to trade the top pick? I feel like it would have kind of made sense, Blankers, if they were to somehow confuse other teams or trick other teams to think that they also might have been in the mix to take quarterback.
Yeah, I think that the only thing surprising to me is that you want to play as much poker as you can. You want to keep everybody guessing until the final minute that you decide to either trade it or take someone there with it. But I think you also have to appease a player and an agent who aren't going to be very happy whether it was legit or not, that if you're floated out there in trade rumors, because it's a bad look, because it looks like you're pulling the plug on a guy.
And especially that agent.
Who is it?
Mulligetta.
Oh, it is Mulligetta. So,
what if you just tell him behind the door, like behind closed doors, though? Hey, like this is all a bluff. Like,
I don't think it's over yet.
No matter what.
Like, I don't think it's over yet. I think you're going to hear smoke. I think combine pro days, you're going to see him there. Like the GM will be at the Ohio State pro day to see Jackson Smith and Jigba, but people are going to be talking about if he's there to see CJ Stroud.
But I think Jeremy's thought was one I had too. Was like, wouldn't you just call them ahead of time and say, hey, look, you're going to hear a lot of things right now. But we're playing cards. So we've got to give everybody the indication that we could go a million different directions so everything's on the table so we can do what's best with this pick, whether it is to choose somebody or to trade it and trade down. It's surprising that they didn't, if they didn't, but I believe that from Justin Fields' perspective, you want the organization to stay loyal at all times throughout whatever the process might be.
The only other thing I would suggest is that maybe they already know what's coming. Like, maybe there's been these – at the Senior Bowl right now, they're having these preliminary conversations with, you know, with the Colts. What is Ballard going to want from 4-1? The Panthers, the Raiders, like, all these teams. Maybe the Seahawks are looking up to trade up. Like, I think they also know that they – potentially there's enough teams that need a quarterback. They don't need the leverage. And we keep talking about defense. Well, what if they're just doing the same thing? Like, what if they're saying, hey, Houston, if you really want Will Anderson, you got to come get him.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds crazy.
Now, do you think there's any chance that they – don't go defense, and they go with a receiver in the first round? They trade down that far?
I think they'd have to trade with Seattle and get 5-20.
Okay. Because I think all we've ever talked about was they want either Anderson or Carter, and so because they're not looking for quarterback, the ideal trade partner is the Colts. But you could have the best receiver and get down in the high single digits.
Yeah, I think they're going back farther than that if they're going receiver.
Okay.
I think there's 0% chance a team trades up and goes defense at one, though.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, anybody 0%. Trading up is going quarter.
So, like, that Chicago bluff that you just said, like, with Houston, like, come get your guy. Like, Houston's not doing that. Houston's just going to call their bluff and take either – if they go defense, just take the guy that's there or just take quarterback. I also think that the chances of Chicago drafting at one is, like, 10%. I think it's very low Chicago drafts at one.
What would you put it at, Joe?
Zero.
You think there's
– I'll say 5%. You can't say zero.
So there's – I would think the only thing that I think that there is a chance is they just don't find the right market, that surprisingly no one is willing to give up what they're looking for. But I think you're right. I think you guys are both right. I would say as close to zero as you can get. They're trading down.
I think the Texans make sure there's a market, that the Texans could offer the least amount to move up one spot to guarantee they get their guy. And the Bears might just at the end be like, look, we'll take this. We'll move back one spot. Let's – less than everyone else. Like, I think there's a way you see the Bears not take the first pick and they just don't get another first rounder. But, like, because, like, I think there's no chance they're taking a quarterback. I think their plan is to roll out Fields, and if he's a disaster and doesn't improve, their plan is to take the draft capital they get from trading back now and go get Caleb Williams or Drake May. I think that's how they look at it.
See, that's why, to Jeremy's point, the one thing that does surprise me is you still put up the smoke screen now, just because you give everybody the option of thinking, hey, look, if we don't get the best deal out there, we're interested in quarterbacks too, and we could do a lot of different things so that you get all these offers on the table and maybe somebody sweetens the pot.
713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who made the list this week? Who had the worst takes of the week? It's Bad Take Boulevard with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
com.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
Let us know any of the worst takes that you've seen this week. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Or just tweet them at Pac-Man Joel. I'd be happy to get them. How about Stephen A. Smith? Stephen A. Smith, whenever the Houston Texans fired Lovie Smith, he had some fire towards the Houston Texans. He had some thoughts about the Houston Texans. Here was everybody's favorite. Say that in jest. Stephen A. Smith talking about the Houston Texans situation.
And as far as I'm concerned, if you're an African-American and you aspire to be a head coach in the National Football League, there's 31 teams you should hope for. You should hope beyond God that the Houston Texans never call you. Not as long as that man is in there. Because it's an embarrassment and something needs to be said about it.
What are you going to say now?
Stephen A. Smith. You tell me.
I mean, Carlos Correa, what are you going to say now? Because now you got arguably the hottest candidate on the market that selected them and wants to be there and wants to do great things for that man. So, again, we see this more and more, which is tough to take for me. And I know I already get it labeled, get off my lawn, old school guy. But I just think that we're too worried about clicks and mentions and retweets and all of the different things that we've seen from the Skips and the Cowherds and the Stephen A's. And there's not enough of just the true journalism of saying it would be one thing if you did what you did and then you hired a white guy and then Stephen A would rightfully have more to be fired up about. But you hired yet your third straight African-American head coach. Oh, by the way, you previously had an African-American general manager. So to have all that smoke and point it all at the Texans' direction, I think is a little misguided when you think about what their track record says. Now, did they hire the wrong guys? Absolutely. Could it be more about their performance or lack thereof? It should be. But people are going to go this direction, and we knew it was going to happen.
The Romeo part was weird to me, too. Like, the Texans took care of Romeo Crennel, kept him around forever. I wish somebody treated me the way the Texans treated David Culley and Lovie Smith, if I'm being completely honest with you. I wish that somebody handed me $20 to $25 million to work for one season. I wish somebody treated me as badly as the Houston Texans.
You would never see me or hear from me again, and I'd be fine.
Same. I mean, I'd probably still do Houston.
Oh, you'd be on Twitter.
And I'd still, no, I wouldn't. I would disappear from Twitter in a heartbeat.
Really?
Trust me. Absolutely.
I thought you liked those, getting into those sometimes.
That's because of the job.
Okay.
I would absolutely never be on Twitter, and I would be so happy and content with it. That's a job.
Yeah, you get me the money. You give me the money, to that kind of money, and say walk away. I'm walking, and I ain't talking, and bye. That's simple.
Find somebody that treats you as poorly as the Texans treated Culley and Lovie, who no one else was going to hire, by the way. 9188. We had this text come in earlier this week. I think I might have warned 9188 that he was going to land on the list of Bad Take Boulevard whenever he tweeted this in. We were talking about the Astros and grading their offseason, and the conversation came up about Jose Abreu, which I love Jose Abreu. Great signing. I wanted Jose Abreu since last summer. I love Abreu. Now, the one concern, if you want to call it that, or the one question, or his power numbers, right? You know, the power numbers went down last year. He's getting a year older. Usually power numbers, unless you're Barry Bonds, don't increase the older that you get. 9188 said, if Abreu hits singles and doubles when guys are on base, it's as good as home runs. My hands, I know you can't see me right now, Blinkers, because I'm in Wichita. My hands right now are on the top of my forehead, and I am looking down in disgust. No, a single or a double is never as good as a home run, unless it's like a walk-off situation. But no, a single or a double 99% of the time is not as good as a home run. For that 9188, you made the list of Bad Take Boulevard.
And rightfully so. And I think that, you know, their bigger point is when you got a lineup as stacked at the Astros is, and they're going to keep, you know, stacking and putting together hit after hit and rally after rally, you still got to get the next big hit to get the run in, as opposed to the home run, done deal. I mean, start to finish, you've handled your business. So, yeah, it's a bit much.
Yeah, bad take landing on Bad Take Boulevard. Our texters are not immune to Bad Take Boulevard.
No, not at all. Go ahead.
How about this one from New York, Blankers? New York, whoever, I don't know who made this decision, they lit up the Empire State Building with that. Eagles colors. I wonder how Todd the Show feels about this as a Giants fan, or even if you're a Jets fan. How are you lighting up the Empire State Building when half of your city is a Giant fan, half the city is a Jet fan, with the Eagles colors after they clinched a spot in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by this, and that on top of Micah Parsons sending all kinds of love Lane Johnson's way.
Loser.
At the way that he has been blocking and doing the things he's been doing. I mean, I understand he might be your boy or whatever reasons you guys might be tight, but I mean, that's a bad look. Overall, it's the NFC East. The hatred runs deep and it's gone, you know, for years and years and decades and decades. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen.
There has been one.
Unless there's like
support. You don't remember this?
Is this like from Houston with a natural disaster or
no.
something?
No. Jeremy, do you remember? It has to do with the Astros.
I don't remember.
I don't.
The Dallas skyline. They put the Astros colors up and put Astros lights in 2017. They lit up their skyline in Astros colors with the name in the skyline.
I don't remember that.
Like
I thought you meant in Houston.
No, I guess with Houston.
That's weird.
That's really weird with the Rangers there.
Could you imagine if Houston did that for the Cowboys?
Yeah, it had to be the Houston Strong thing.
Oh, you mean like after they told us we couldn't go play games there?
Right. Right, yeah.
To make up for it?
Well, you know, it's never too late to try and make another first impression. Yeah, I can't remember that.
I like petty Joe George.
I think this is like the dumbest thing ever. And they did it with the Chiefs, too, the Empire State Building.
They did?
Yeah. It's seriously, it is just it's the dumbest thing you could ever do. I couldn't imagine. I know we're going to talk about the tattoo thing maybe in the next segment. Yeah. If I ever woke up in the city of Chicago and I saw Packers lights on the building after they, well, if they can win another Super Bowl.
Shut your mouth.
Then I would be disgusted. It's just embarrassing. You can't do those things.
Yeah. There's no way. First of all, there aren't any skyscrapers in Green Bay. But I mean, if you just you go to the next closest city, you go to
like
Milwaukee.
The next person's lawn.
Yeah, there's
and just
no way in Milwaukee you're putting up the Bears orange and blue. You're just not doing it.
Would they just put signs in like people's lawns around the stadium, like
they
"Go
sure
Bears"?
Do. Yeah, Lombardi Avenue. And if you want to park there, it's only $10.
Todd, the show says, trade the Empire State Building to Portland. Lemmy says it was the Omni Hotel in Dallas that did that. That's wild.
I think that's crossing some lines there that you don't want to cross.
We already mentioned Tyler Huntley being a Pro Bowler. That lands on Bad Take Boulevard. I hate that he's a Pro Bowler.
He
threw more interceptions. He had less touchdowns than interceptions.
That's right. Pro Bowler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chalk that one up.
He shouldn't be a Pro Bowler. I want to see him in the long drive contest. I wanted to get to this one, though. People are putting Oreos in orange juice.
Oh.
Is this a bad take?
Awful.
Sometimes on Bad Take, we ask other people if it's a bad take. Is this a bad take?
Awful.
Milk's favorite cookie becoming orange juice's favorite cookie?
You can't.
No, the acidic orange with the goodness of an Oreo cookie? I don't know. I will never understand that. Don't give me this whole cilantro either tastes wonderful
or
tastes like soap.
You guys got any weird food takes I should know?
I mean, just call Brendan. He'll give you everything you need.
I got some tweet about something about pizza yesterday.
I think chocolate, peanut butter, and pizza are all a little bit overrated. That's a hot take.
Oh, boy.
If something like Brendan didn't put sauce on his pizza or something.
I don't think
Jake
that's
believes
true.
In putting cold cuts of cheese on a piece of pizza.
That's like there's a certain restaurant in New York that's
like, he said it in New York. It's like a street vendor or a restaurant that puts like cold cheese slices on the top of pizza, which just seems disgustingly bad.
Yeah. That's Bad Take Boulevard this week. All of those who made the list. I said 9188. It was actually 9198. He's not happy that he made the list. Uh-oh. I made the bad take list, huh? Well, you, sir, read my last four digits wrong. LOL. Welcome to the list. I guess I did botch that. But home runs are always greater than singles. 713-780-ESPN. You see some bad takes through the week, just tweet them at Pac-Man Joel. Let's talk about what the bench was talking about a little bit earlier. Would you get a tattoo of the rival of your favorite team for $1 million? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Because I like Blankers so much,
it's a
give
lie.
Me a top 150 pick for Brandon Cooks. I'll do it for a top 150 pick. I was just checking in for my flight tomorrow. thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. I like you a lot. Some days more than others, which I'm sure the feeling's mutual. I was checking into my flight tomorrow morning in Wichita. They offered me money to take a different flight, which I won't be able to do it tomorrow because it will conflict with the show, and I know you want to see me in person. How much would you? How much normally for you? Let's say you have to wait for 6 hours to fly home. How much money would you need in order to be incentivized to take a later flight?
I'm going $500 to $1,000 voucher.
Okay.
Yeah, but it depends for all of us, right? Huh? Like, obviously, these are – it's a no-go. You could offer me $1 million, and if I got my kid, I've done one flight with them, you cannot convince me to stay in an airport longer with them.
You know that's a totally different ballgame.
For all of
them. You would do it for $1 million.
Oh, yeah, I'd probably do it for $1 million.
But I'm just saying because I've been there and done that on – like, I know what you're talking about. Like, Taylor's first flight ever, there was all the anxiety in the world that at some point she was going to lose her, and she didn't. And then we got to layover, and she didn't, and that situation happened, and I'm like, nope, we're going to keep going because we're going good. And the next time, Grandma and Mom decided maybe we should. Well, it's your loss. You take that.
Yeah, JJ was tough his first flight.
Ooh.
He just didn't want to sit still.
I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah.
You're going to have your hands full.
He just wasn't ready. Like, it was too early. We wanted to go back home, see my friends and family in Illinois, and then, like, it was just.
Sensory overload, too. Too much going on.
Big
and then
time.
All of a sudden, you go from, oh, the gift shop, oh, this, oh, that, I want to run here, do that. Do, and then all of a sudden, you get on the plane, it's like they realize they're not going anywhere for a couple hours, and then they could just lose their mind.
Yeah, pay for the extra seat, Jeremy.
Oof.
It's not – we had JJ in our lap. That was 10 times worse. We just would have buckled them in a car seat, like in the plane, it would have been 10 times better. 10 times
pay
better.
Pay for the extra seat?
Pay for the extra seat. It's worth the investment.
The way you roll? Come on. You're good.
Yeah.
I'm cheap. I'm frugal.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. It depends on the situation. Like, how much you would take to very much depend on the situation. Like, if I could get a same flight 3 hours later, I'll do it for, like, $300. That's $100 an hour. Absolutely, I would do it for that. There was one time for Tulsa. They said – I think they gave me $500 travel voucher, and they bumped me to first class.
Ooh.
Which was, like, a two-hour, three-hour later flight. That was a no-brainer.
That's a good one.
Like, I'll just go do some work. I'll get a $300 travel voucher, and then I'll also sit in first class. I would have done it for the first class upgrade.
I think you bring up a good, valid point in all this, and that is, how far do you got to go? Like, if it's an hour and a half or an hour, you can stomach your way through that. If you're going California or you're going 3 hours plus or in that three-hour range, now it's a different scenario. You better really take care of me because that's adventures and babysitting that you don't want.
Yeah, it depends on where you're going, what your itinerary is, like all of that comes into play. We asked Trap. Bench was talking about this a little bit earlier as well. Would you get a tattoo of your favorite team's rival for $1 million?
Well, I'll tell you what. I was glad.
I'd have to give a hoot.
I was glad that Trap handled that the way he did because I thought he could go satellite radio on us on that one because I know he is highly passionate about his Seminoles.
I think we're equipped to handle that.
Oh, yeah, we are now. I mean, here's the thing that I would what I was thinking about when I heard the bench talking about this morning. Can you imagine if you asked Vernon Maxwell if he'd put a Utah Jazz tattoo on him for $1 million? Because I think that would be as much as the instantaneous cuss words would be coming out. I think he would contemplate it.
You think so?
I think he might.
I mean, I would definitely do it for $1 million.
There's no doubt in my mind that I would do this for $1 million.
Me too.
I'd do a lot less.
I'm confident enough in my fanhood and my fandom that I could not care less. And plus, I'd put it in a place where, like, I hide it. Like, I could cover it up, you know? Like, it'd be very easy that no one would ever even see this thing. For $1 million, that's life-changing money. I don't care if I have a rival's tattoo on my body. No doubt about it. This is an easy question.
Wait, Joe said he'd do it for a lot less.
I think I would.
How much less?
$100.
Well, let's see. I got $33,000 in student loan debt, so let's start there.
So you do it for $33,000.
How much? Hold on. What was your student loan?
$33,000.
$33,000 in student debt?
Yeah, I went to an art school.
You're going to have to work here for like 10 years to pay that off.
I'm never going to pay it off.
Okay.
I'm going to die with it.
So
I'm convinced of that.
That didn't get relieved or whatever?
No.
You didn't get any of these handouts?
No, they vetoed the handouts.
There's still not a chance?
There's still a chance, but I doubt it.
Okay, so you're putting a Packer logo somewhere?
And see, you know what? Because you know why? I could put a Packer logo somewhere, and what I can do is, look, I have an idiot tattoo artist. I meant to get a Georgia Bulldogs tattoo, and they put the wrong colors. I can just say I'm a Bulldogs fan. I can lie.
I thought about different ways that I could degrade the Bears if I had to do it. and it would be like, you know, the Bears still suck. I like the idea I gave Trap, like, you know, put lipstick over that and put it on my butt cheek and then basically say the Bears can still kiss my ass. But yeah, I'm not a tattoo guy, but if you give me a mill for it,
yeah,
I'm like, Jeremy, I'm going to find some place that I can hide it, but I guarantee I'm going to take that cash.
Let's Brandon Cooks this. Like, let's go to our line of demarcation. Like Joe just said, Joe, what's your number again?
Like, I would say like, let's call it, I want to buy a house. Let's call it like 300K.
Okay. You're a lot more expensive than Dell.
I don't know. I got four tattoos already. Like, what's another one if no one's going to see it?
So you have four.
I have four. And I have a tattoo that I'm embarrassed of that I will never tell you what it is.
Oh.
What is it?
Uh-oh.
I got my fraternity letters tattoo right one night when I was drunk.
Where?
On my chest.
Yeah. Geez, way to keep a secret, Joe.
I'm never going to tell it to you if you tell it to us seconds later.
I tell people. I don't care. I got drunk and I got a tattoo, and it's a huge mistake, and I can't wait to get it covered up.
Bigger mistake, that, or taking Allen Iverson's tattoos and putting them on your body in the same spot?
I hung out with him one night.
I know you did.
I would assume the answer is Allen Iverson because I don't really know what all he's got, but okay. He has a lot.
Yeah, he does have a lot of tattoos. I know that because we hung out once at a TGI Fridays in Philadelphia.
You picked up the
city
tab, right?
Brotherly love. No. City of Iverson and Branham love that night. I think I'd do it for $5,000.
Oh, my God.
Serious.
No way.
I think I would do a rival's tattoo on my body for $5,000.
Who would your rival be?
I would have to give a hoot. It'd be a Rice Al, I think.
Oh. That's your rival?
Stop.
Get out of here. Yeah.
What do you mean stop?
Your rivalry rival? Had to be.
They haven't been good at anything in like a decade.
Yeah. It has to be like.
My rival? Y'all tell me then.
You don't have one.
It depends on the sport.
Well, then I would do it for far less than $5,000 if I don't have one.
Wouldn't you agree that it's different for U of A? So I was wondering if it'd be pro or college, but obviously it's the Cougs. So if you're going to go Cougs, wouldn't you agree that the football rivals are different than the basketball rivals?
I guess the difficult thing here is like all the rivals have not been conference affiliates for a little while.
The common ground could be Cincinnati, year. Right?
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't think Cincinnati would be the biggest American football rival. Like, I think you would throw SMU into the mix, UCF into the mix, maybe Memphis into the mix. Basketball, I think it'd be Memphis.
Yeah, I think Memphis and then Cincinnati, right?
For hoops?
Yeah.
I don't know if Cincinnati, really. Cincinnati's always been kind of weird. Like, either Cincinnati has owned us whenever they were really good and we were not, or we've owned them ever since we've been good and they have not. Like, it's been a seesaw. Like, it hasn't really been two really good teams head-to-head for the history of that rivalry. I would say Memphis currently, but, I mean, all this changes next year. Like, I would have to get a new one. Like,
okay, what
no
if it
way
was,
next year.
But that's weak sauce, the Rice Owls.
What if it was a North Carolina State championship tattoo?
A what?
North Carolina
Ooh,
State.
That's tough.
Jimmy V.
Oh.
Yeah, that would take more money.
Yeah.
You're right.
Because that's like,
a really good pool.
You don't really have a real rival. Like, that's, like, the biggest moment.
That's like the most devastating, depressing moment, for at least from a basketball point of view. Man, yeah, my price just went up. My price just went up. Probably
10,500.
I'm cheap, man. I can be bought. Everybody's got a price. I could do it for 10,000. I think.
See, I'm so anti-tattoo. You're gonna have to get a lot higher than that for me to consider this.
I mean, I don't have a tattoo.
Like, I don't either.
But I'm pro. I am also anti-tattoo a bit. Like, I don't mind that other people have it, just not for me.
Right,
I'm not sure what I'm going to look like in 10 years because I'm not the greatest eater or worker-outer.
When barbed wire on the bicep looks like a jump rope, it's not a good look.
And if you don't get it completed, you just can't get the tattoo.
Mm-hmm. That's something that I've been very scared of. Is like, what is it going to look like in 10 years when I get even more fat? Like, that's something I don't really love. But I'm more pro-money than I am anti-tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, I guess you could still go through the whole, you could remove it at some point, but
Lance said you can't remove it.
Okay. Because I've also heard that's more painful than getting the actual tattoo.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, give me $10,000. I'll do it. I'm cheap.
You got to give me a lot more than that. I ain't doing that.
What's your line?
Hundo.
100K?
Yep.
Man, you're bougie. All right, it's going to do it for us. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thanks to Joe George for doing all of the hard work today, sort of. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5. And I thought you weren't going to say it for a moment. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Wheelhouse is next.
We
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.